You're listening to a special edition of Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're taking a listen back to some of the best conversations this year, and this show is diving into the careers of two Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonists who call Sacramento home. Darren Bell is the first Black editorial cartoonist to ever receive the award, and his latest work turns inward with a graphic memoir. Growing up in Los Angeles in the 80s and 90s to a white mother and Black father, through vulnerable illustrations, Darren examined his life, sharing the intimate experiences that shaped his understanding of race and racism. It all came full circle when, as a father, he must decide whether he's ready to have the talk with his own son. Darren Bell joined us back in September about his graphic novel, The Talk. Thanks for making the time, Darren.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
You reference points in your book that you write about that are reference points for myself, too. I'm from Los Angeles. I went to LAUSD. I'm from Northeast LA. I also went to UC Berkeley as well. But unlike me, I didn't have a ton of direction. You were so focused, and you really had a drive at a young age that centered around creativity, around drawing, around cartoons. Your career as a staff cartoonist began at 20 years old while in college. When did drawing and creating illustrations, when did it start for you?
Well, I actually show where it starts in the book. It started with my need to express something that I couldn't actually say that an incident happens. I have a bad run-in with the police at the age of six, which I, you know, as a six-year-old thought that I brought it on myself. And I went home and I just couldn't tell my mom about it. So I just drew and drew and drew until I got it out.
Yeah, I mean, as children, we don't always have the right words or even the emotional vocabulary to really understand a world that we're still learning about, right? It's kind of like a blank canvas. With creativity and drawing, I mean, these are outlets to cope and express ourselves, and healthy ones at that. How did it help you?
Well, it's basically art therapy. I think, you know, people are hardwired to respond to images and to express ourselves through images. I mean, it's why our GPSs have screens with maps. You know, it's why hieroglyphics came to be. It's why cave paintings still exist. For children, it's you know, whenever you ask them something that's too painful to relate in words, you know, you can hand them some crayons and a paper, and you know, they could express 1,000 words in one picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a child, I think that's why I gravitated toward graphic novels and comic books. They're so much more powerful than I think people give them credit for.
And we learned that, or I learned that, when reading your graphic novel, a memoir. I mean, it's beautiful. When it comes to how you took art therapy as a child and you turned it into a career, it's a big part of your life. You have syndicated comic strips that have run for two decades. When did you begin to make the turn and begin dipping into politics with editorial cartoons?
Well, as a child, I mean, my father and I didn't have the closest relationship, but one thing that we shared was political satire. We used to read the LA Herald Examiner and the LA Times, and we'd read the cartoons together. You know, we used to watch All in the Family at night. So I always knew, and my father, I would see him open up and laugh, you know, while we were watching this, and I always knew that was something that I wanted to do when I grew up, and I wanted to talk about important things in a way that would make people laugh.
Did you always know that you would end up writing or creating a graphic memoir, turning inward?
I did not.
When did that start?
I thought I was gonna draw entirely metaphorical stories about superheroes, because I grew up reading the X-Men, and that was one long allegory about racism and discrimination, and it was really helpful that I was also, you know, I could turn that off whenever I felt like it and escape into, you know, their costumes and the stories. And I thought that's what I was going to do. But I found that I was more suited to to telling stories four panels at a time, as in comic strips, like comic strips like Bloom County and Doonesbury. So I began doing that in high school for my high school paper once I became editor in chief. And you know, one day we had a hole to fill, so I drew a political cartoon, and people responded really well to that. So I figured this is what I should be doing.
Hmm. Did you ever consider having a career in journalism? In the print, like you were the editor in chief of your school paper.
I did. That's what I wanted to do for a while. I wrote four or five columns and articles per issue for my high school paper, plus the staff editorial. And no one ever said a word about it to me. But when I drew that cartoon, everybody was talking about it. So it was like a light bulb going off. Yeah. I mean, I realized that it's still journalism. It's just graphic journalism.
There's certainly a message behind, each poignant illustration that you put together.
Right.
The title of the book is called The Talk. It sounds like a simple title. But it centers on that conversation, or that time that you briefly brought up when you were 6 years old. Your mom had a conversation with you about why you couldn't have a realistic water gun. I mean, she feared for your safety. You kept the story to yourself for a long time. When did you decide that you wanted to share it?
I first shared it with a friend in grade school. And after I'd had a run-in with a security guard who, it's in the book, so I won't spoil it. But that friend responded by basically telling me that, I must have imagined it, that, my experience that I knew happened did not happen. That was maybe one of the first incidents of gaslighting that I experienced in my life. And it's something that I think most Black people and most minorities go through, people thinking that they have the right to stand as an authority over your own experience, to decide whether they're going to validate it or not, to decide whether they're going to even believe it happened. So I kept it to myself after that until years later, when I gave an interview to the Washington Post about a series of cartoons I drew about Trayvon Martin, they asked me, they asked why I decided to do that, and all of a sudden this experience that I think I had actually suppressed ever since grade school came rushing back to me.
When you talk about grade school or draw and write about it, me back to school as a kid and being mixed race and not feeling like, you fit in anywhere, being told you're not really, at least in my case, you're not really Mexican, you're not really Asian, you're not really white. And I remember a part of your novel where a student called you half-African, in high school. And sharing even the gaslighting among your friends who care about you and they like you, how did that influence your work?
Well, I think my work has revolved around just cutting through gaslighting. For the past 20 years, I've done that in my comic strip and my editorial cartoon. I call it how I see it, and people write in and say no. They gaslight you. They say how do you know what people have in their hearts? How can you tell that these incredibly racist comments you heard weren't just somebody misspeaking? I put it down in black and white on the page as not to convince gaslighters, but to comfort people who are going through that same mm-hmm. thing. I want people to see my cartoons and think, wow, I somebody sees what's happening to me. And this stuff really is happening.
Your family plays such a big role in your book. What stands out to me is your mom, especially. There are many instances where, your mom is white and she passionately defends you and your brother to a point where as a child, it embarrasses you, or you're like, you're making it worse, like, stop. But now you're a parent. How do you view all of that now?
Well, she was a superhero in retrospect. She did exactly what a great parent is supposed to do. She didn't care how embarrassing it might have been. She didn't care about you know, comforting the feelings or taking into account the feelings of somebody who had wronged her child. She just stood up for her child. And that's that, you know, to go back to what I said earlier, mm-hmm. that's what I do with my cartoons. I just say what I think is the truth. I don't really care about, you know, about the feelings of people who care more about their own feelings than they do about the point that I'm making. I mean, we have a whole state that's banning books, including The Talk, which was recently banned in part of Florida. I guess because they're concerned about the feelings of white children, and they're more concerned about their feelings than they are about the actual lived experiences mm-hmm. that black people go through.
Yeah, not wanting to have uncomfortable conversations to move forward, to progress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to have these conversations. It's ironic. The reason listed as for that school district, for that county banning the book, is because it was age inappropriate. It's ironic because that's the point of the book. These things happening to little Darren in the book were age inappropriate, and they're being shared by millions. These experiences are shared by millions and millions of children. And children need to read about it. Grown-ups need to read about it.
Your mom had that conversation with you at a young age when you were 6 years old. And your mom talked about racism directly. Whereas when it came to the men in your life, your brother, your father, your grandpa, they kind of talked around it or even avoided it or discounted it. And you kind of had to, from what I gathered from your work, interpret what they were saying as opposed to your mom just like giving it to you straight. How did you come to understand that dynamic as you got older and became a parent yourself?
Well, at first it was confusing because my mom, who was white, was the only one telling me these things. The only one telling me that the world was going to treat me differently than they would treat my white friends. You know, the men in my life, my grandfather, my father, my brother, they chose not to talk about it, and I think it's because, they felt it too deeply. They had their own experiences, and they didn't want to influence the course of my life with their own experiences. They didn't want I think they didn't want to infect me with their own trauma. And my mom didn't have to worry about that. She didn't have any personal trauma. To her, it was more academic. It was something that she witnessed in the civil rights era, something that she became passionate about, but not something that happened to her personally. I mean, she had her own struggles when she married a black man. And I mean, that's going to be the topic of my next book. But my brother, for instance, and my father taught me, when I tried to have the talk with him, he taught me to just laugh it off and not really think about it. My brother, when I tried to talk to him about these issues, insisted that the discrimination we were facing was not because of race, it was because we were poor. And I think the reason both of them did that is because it was some way of giving themselves agency. They had some control. My father thought, you know, it's totally in my power to laugh about something. And my brother thought, you know, it's totally in my power to not be poor. You know, I could work hard, I could get a great job, you know, and then, you know, someday the discrimination will stop.
It was something that they could control.
Right.
I thought about your mom during one moment. It was kind of, for me, a full circle moment. And that was when you were at Berkeley and it was your senior thesis. And a Berkeley professor accused you of plagiarism with no proof. And instead of cowering or being afraid, I mean, you calmly fight back. And what did that teach you? I thought of your mom in that moment.
Well, yeah, I didn't really consciously respond to her. I just, everything everything sort of synthesized in that moment. My mom, the way my mom would just stand up to teachers, the way my brother and my father had this desire to just assert control over what was happening in their life. So I opened my mouth and, you know, I won't spoil it because it's in the book, but all of these people came out of my mouth is when I opened it. And but what it showed me, I mean, up until then, I was buying into the whole respectability politics thing. I was thinking, well, you know, if I just excel in school, I'll be fine. And, you know, I was excelling in school.
Yeah, she didn't think you were capable of writing that caliber of a thesis paper, essentially.
Right. That's the thing. I was excelling a little bit too much for her. I mean, I was like average. I was doing average work probably for kids in that class. But it was a high caliber upper division class at UC Berkeley. And it just didn't seem to fit. When she read my essay, she didn't understand how it could be eloquent, you know, how it could be competent even. And that's, you know, that's when I realized that no matter how respectable you are, no matter how much you excel, eventually you're going to run into somebody who for the irrational reason of race is going to try to sabotage you. And you have to be prepared for that moment. And the best way to prepare to prepare for it is to have that talk when you're young, to know the signs to look for when you're talking to certain people, and to not be caught by surprise when it happens.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist Darren Bell about his graphic memoir, The Talk. The graphic memoir, I mean, I would not call it lighthearted. There are just feelings of frustration, of anger, there are a lot of painful moments and difficult moments, but there's also a tremendous amount of love and also humor. That's a tough balance to strike. How did you do it?
I think it's probably second nature. I've been drawing comic strips since 1995, and you know, I've dealt with really important issues, and I always, you know, have to somehow have a punchline. But the punchline for me is never a gag. The humor is found in the way characters humble themselves, or the universality of the experience is funny in itself. The humor just comes. I don't try for humor, you know, but when the humor is there, I reach out and grab it and put it on the page. And, you know, I did that throughout the talk. I mean, life isn't just bleak. And, you know, when you're faced with adversity and discrimination, you know, it's a horrible thing and it's traumatic, but it also gives you opportunities to find out who you are and, you know, to laugh at the craziness of the situation. You have to.
Given that your book, I think it spans like 40 years of your life. Mm-hmm. How was it like reflecting and filtering down your life into some of your most pivotal and poignant moments?
In a way, it was cathartic and it was freeing, because I mean there was some emotional trauma that I carried from these experiences. You know, I spent my whole life trying to suppress them or to wish that they hadn't happened to me. But as I was writing this story, you know, I realized that, you know, things happen for a reason, but we tend to imbue them with that reason. You know, the older we get, you know, we look back and we realize that our life is what it is because of what we went through and how we dealt with it. And there were certain things that happened to me as a kid that I always thought I brought on myself. But when I was writing the story and drawing the pictures, I realized, for instance, with the cop, this 6 foot something cop standing, towering over a 6 year old child, there was absolutely nothing about that that was that 6 year old child's fault. And I don't think I truly realized that until I drew those images. So doing the talk was the ultimate form of art therapy for me.
You call it the talk because it's a question that you have to face as a father, you know, with your own 6 year old son who was asking about George Floyd. What advice do you have for adults or caretakers who don't really know how to begin difficult and uncomfortable conversations, but they're necessary to have?
Well, the first thing you should do is ask, ask how your child's day is going. Ask what they're learning. Ask if they're, you know, if they have any problems, if they're being bullied. And, you know, if the child's not going through anything traumatic, there's no reason to really have the talk yet. But as soon as the child experiences something like when I moved to Sacramento, my son was 3 and a half, almost 4, and we went to a playground at Oak Park, and a little white girl came and sat next to him, and you know they were getting along fine, but her father looked terrified, and he came and snatched her away. And, you know, my son wasn't old enough to really notice what happened, so I didn't have the talk with him yet. But a similar incident happened later on, and, you know, and my child was old enough to ask about it, and that's when I, you know, realized he's old enough to hear about it.
Finally, Darren, how do you want readers to feel once they finish the book? And does that change depending on who you envision that reader to be?
Well, yeah, I want Black people who've gone through this and who are going through this to be comforted, to know that, you know, there's a way through it, and there's always hope, and the best way you could prepare your child for it. I mean, you can't keep this stuff from happening to your kid, but you can prepare them for it. You can just tell them that, you know, this is what's going to happen someday, and be prepared for it. Don't expect it, but when it happens, don't be surprised. And for white people, you know, the book is filled with countless microaggressions that I experienced in my life that millions of other people experienced too. And I think, you know, a lot of them happen because people, you know, well, people just haven't thought about it. But if they read this book, they might see, you know, some things that they tend to do, and they might stop. You know, they might be a bit introspective and think, have I been doing this to people? And, you know, that's the best way for people to grow. And, you know, I think, you know, growth is always good.
I second that. Thank you so much, Darren.
Thank you.
It was a wonderful conversation. That is Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist Darren Bell talking about his latest work, a graphic memoir titled The Talk. You're listening to a special edition of Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.